Welcome to the Modern Masculinity Podcast, where we delve into the depths of what it means to be a man in today's world, and we explore the real-life challenges and triumphs that you and I face every single day. My name is Hector Santi Esteban, and I come with no answers, only questions for some of the most wise, insightful, and grounded men that I know. So get settled in. You're listening to Modern Masculinity. Fellas, welcome to another episode. So glad that you're here. I hope this episode finds you well, but I know that this episode is for sure going to leave you better than when it found you. And I'm honored and humbled that you're here, grateful to be a part of your journey, and excited to introduce you to our guest today. His name is Mr. Pat Barber, and he'd probably be upset if I called him like Mr. Pat Barber, because it would make him sound like some stuffy, old, sophisticated aristocrat. And that's the opposite of who Pat is. Pat is one of the most rugged, down-to-earth, real guys that I've had the chance to connect with. And what I love about what he talks about is it's just a reality to being a dad. There's a reality to being a dad who's a business owner, who's a husband, who wants to have a life. And Pat has put it together. And what I love about what he's doing is that he's really showing other men the way as well. And he's doing it in a way that is really authentic to him. And so I just think that once you guys get a chance to get to know Pat and hang out with him, that you're going to fall in love with him too. So enough of me, y'all. Let's get into today's episode with Pat Barber. Pat, welcome to the Modern Masculinity Podcast. Thanks for being here, my man.
Of course, man. Stoked to be here.
We've started a tradition on this show, and I could ask you about how awesome you are and how many people you've helped and how great of a badass you are and social media, and we'll get into that. But I find that one thing that has connected our guests to our audience a little bit quicker is taking us into your world and sharing something that's real or prescient or challenging for you, because I think your Instagram bio reads it well. It's like you said, it's Pat Barber, father, husband, and essentially business owner, right? And as awesome and badass as that sounds, and people go, damn, he's got it all. He's got it made. What's real or what challenges do those things also present for you right now?
We all have challenges, right? And for me, if I had to pick the most current pressing challenge, how about we go with the challenge that I'm currently focusing on? And that right now for me is managing activity around yelling with my children. It's actually a challenge that I'm trying to have myself do. That to me right now is where my focus is. But that's what I would say is I'm attempting currently to find other ways of communicating in acute pain point scenarios rather other than yelling. And that I would say is my current challenge in life.
You and all the other dads out there. A good friend of the show, Matt Drinkhan, he also hosts The Eternal Optimist, and I think he was like episode 4 on our show. He has found a way to create a no yelling household, and I'm not there, and I don't even know how close we are to there, but he's like a 6'6". He's not hulking. He'd probably be okay saying that he's lanky, but he's still like 6'6". And to his daughters, he's a huge guy. And so any amount of raising his voice is super intimidating. And then I see that for my kids, and I'm the opposite of that. I'm 5'6" and the opposite of lanky, if you will. But even then, I can't imagine being my 4 or 5-year-old and just being there when dad's lost it and dad is yelling, like what that might be like, right? That's a very kind of real situation for a kid.
And I think that we all have different degrees with which that is. Like you could be 4 foot and it wouldn't really matter in terms of the towering monstrosity that you are over your child. I think there's a sense of positional authority that you always have over children. You are their parent. But there's also a personal authority that you have in terms of how they respect and care for you. And I think the damage you do when you are not doing things intentionally when it comes to yelling is more in the personal authority realm. As they grow and as they age, you're damaging that relationship more so than the positional authority, because that's always there because you're always going to be the parent. But yeah, that's it's a challenge for everyone.
Yeah. You think that as a parent, at least you falsely believe that, oh, because I'm their parent, they're going to listen to me. And I remember realizing early on, they don't give a fuck what you say, like at a certain point, just because you say it. Of course, you can come in and you start to rule with an iron fist and you can start to be this dictator-like figure. But the moment that you start to do that, and if you have some sort of self-awareness, you start to realize what it does to them and what that kind of does to what you're saying is like what it does to that relationship that you have with them.
Right. Yeah. I think too, though, it's examining why you're saying what you're saying. So I think children are organically predisposed to being curious and trying to figure things out and wanting to just explore the world. And so oftentimes the things we say to them are putting boundaries on that. And I think that one of the things that happens with parents is they'll go to put a boundary that then gets pushed, but then they'll fail to examine why that boundary exists. So they'll not be like, hey, I don't want you to do this because of XYZ. It's, hey, don't wear a hat at the dinner table. It's like, why? What is a hat doing at the dinner table? Who gives a shit about a hat at the dinner table? If you walk it back far enough, a hat at the dinner table doesn't matter. Now, there are boundaries that in my mind do matter. Hey, don't run in the street. And then they go, okay, well, why can't I run in the street? It says you die. Like you get hit by a car, you die. So I think where we struggle often is in terms of the balance of ruling with an iron fist and letting the freedom happen is examining the depth of why we're ruling at all. Why not just let them be to some extent, but then realize that there's places that they can't just be. We have to kind of lead by example. To your point of kids don't really care what you say, I wouldn't say it's not that they don't care what you say. I think it's more they don't do what you say, they do what you do. And if you're teaching humans or if you're a business developer or anything along those lines, is people will model what you're doing far easier than they will do what you're saying. I think as an adult, there's an ability to take in what someone says and contextually be like, okay, I'm going to do this differently because they told me to do so. But as a growing organism, it's more about you're watching and constantly putting together how the world's working. So when you see what mom and dad do, that's what you do. And when you see how the world works, that's what you do. Any system that's big enough is always going to have the models that you're learning from, whether it's a business organization or a child. And I think that where I see a lot of dissonance is parents who say one thing and do another. Rather than just live it, they say it. And you're like, that's hard to take you seriously when you're not living it. So I see that's the frustration, and kids don't care what you do. And that's what you say. And they don't because you're not living it. Yeah, that's a false statement.
Totally. So for those of the guys who are kind of new to you and your world, if someone was to look at your page, they go, damn, look at Pat. He's a finished product, if you will. And perhaps there is that. But what I've also found is with a lot of guys, there's kind of some evolutions to that, right? And so I'm curious if you had that similar kind of journey where new and improved is the right way to say it. But was there a 1.0 version of Pat that you look back on and go, here's how I've evolved, or here's how I've progressed from that person?
Sure. I have two social accounts. I have one that's called the Father's Guild, which is more around my ponderings on fatherhood and very specific. And then I have my own just like personal account, which has a lot of the CrossFit stuff and has my fitness and my coaching. I think social media is an exceptionally performative space, and some of it by design and some of it by just the nature of things is that when things are going wrong, unless you're a sociopath, you don't pull out a camera. So you're not going to get the worst side of things unless it's a curated worst side. So I think there's a natural organic piece to that. But I also think people curate vulnerability and they curate a lot of their own image. So I would say that if you were to look at my main social media, you're even going to see, if you go back far enough, there's a lot of just strugglings with thought and figuring things out. And I'm pretty forward with that. I don't have any issue saying that I'm not doing great, because there's a lot of areas I do excel in. If you look, hey, I was a professional athlete for a while. I've got four amazing sons. I've got a home on a 5-acre homestead. I've got a beautiful wife and a job that is satisfying and a great relationship. I have all those things. So that's real. But there's plenty of things that I struggle with. And I wouldn't say it's a 1.0, 2.0. It's more that's life. Like you're always struggling with something. And if you're not facing those things headlong and having a constant sense of systematic self-observation, then you're not going to do well. Because if you get hung up on the stuff that's holding you back, then you just stay there. So I would say that the growth has all come through a desire to be more effective at life, whether it be a relationship that I'm trying to be more effective at, or whether it be a fitness scenario, or whether it be a coaching scenario or whatever it is, it's all just trying to be more effective. What am I trying to do here? Can I be more effective? And I'd say that's my general direction and thought process.
Yeah, it seems like more is being expected out of men. And that sounds negative, and that seems a victim mindset. But because on the other side of that point is that there's more out there that is possible for men. There's more satisfaction. When I think about the roles that my dad and previous generations played, they stayed narrow in their lanes, right? They were like, I don't do that. I don't do bedtime. I don't do bath time. I don't do whatever. Fill in the blank. And I think that limited their experience, limited their joy. And we've talked about on the show about the limit in range of emotions that previous generations have even had. And so with that, though, I think that there's more expected out of them. There's more that's possible for them. But then there's also this lack of resources or role models or whatever to actually help bridge that gap. It's like, yeah, guys are expected to do that, but then no one's really talking about helping guys to get to that place. It's just like, why aren't you there?
Yeah, I think the reason that you're seeing more expected out of men is because there's more people who are doing things differently. Going back to the people, do what you do, not what you say. I think that our previous generations of fathers didn't have many people being particularly emotional or having these sides of them that didn't follow in the like provide and protect and go from there. And nowadays, there's people who are examples of all ends of the spectrum of, you know, you've got provide and protect, but I'm also going to love and be emotional and play playful and like do these other things. So I think there's more people who represent that you see and you go, wow, that's pretty amazing that exists. But like you said, there's not a set of tools that here's how you do that, because your whole life you were raised by someone who didn't have those tools. So your example over and over again was not that. But then you're seeing it's possible and you're like, it is possible. Nothing's being asked of you, but you're seeing it and you're like, man, huh, they look pretty happy and they look like they're enjoying everything. Like I'm not enjoying everything. How can I enjoy everything? And the hard part is I don't think there's a set of tools that is generally applicable other than continued reflection and self-observation, journaling and things along those lines. How can I be more effective? And seeing in all aspects of life, is that the case? Because the tools for me are going to be very different than the tools for you. They can be similar and we can have a conversation about it, but I guarantee you we're going to have different things we need in order to have a very similar outcome, which is a more well-rounded.
Yeah, the self-awareness thing is key, and it's probably the foundational part, because there are some guys from a previous generation that seem to have that self-awareness, but it seems like that's what's coming online now, is that guys are having some self-awareness, and then the next part is not only self-awareness, but the ability to now navigate that stuff, the ability to navigate and deal with our emotions or deal with our trauma or healing. I'm curious if that's been a part of your journey. That's something that's emerged on this show, is the need for guys to do some work looking backwards, right? A lot of guys just want to put their head down and go and grind and not realizing that there are some things that they're holding on to or some things that they need to let go of or something that they need to heal. Was that something that you came across, or how did that kind of play into your journey or development?
For sure. It has to. There's a pretty strong group evidence supporting both life is both nature and nurture. It's not one or the other. It's like a combination of the two. And as we move through life, how things happen on a back end will affect how we perceive them on a front end. And that will then change how we go about things. And it's pretty well documented. And I don't think it's as linear as people make it. Like, I'm this way because my dad did this. And I think you're losing some of the ownership there. Probably that and 9 million other little tiny things that made you this way. But I do think that there is power in looking back, actually more than anything, being, why do I think this way? Why am I doing this? Why is this important? When my son or my wife does X, Y, or Z, why does that make me feel like this? And seeing if you can work it back and be like, is that even the right response? Oh, I could see why in my upbringing, this became really important to me because it was modeled for me here and here. But in the bigger picture, does that even matter? Now I need to go against an ingrained groove in my brain that says, this is out of place if X, Y, and Z happens, and be like, I don't want to do that. I'm going to do it like this instead. And I think that's the power in going back, is being like, why am I doing this? Again, I don't think there is as linear a connection as people sometimes make it out to be, but it can definitely inform your, okay, I accept that happened to me. I accept that this is here and I want to be different. So let me figure out some tools. Let me try this. Does this work? Nah, it doesn't work. Let me try this. Does this work? Doesn't work. And that process is very real.
Yeah. It's an undoing I've found, because we as parents, even I'm realizing, like, we can't help but program and condition our kids. That's our job a little bit, is to condition them, even if it's just to not run into the street or to not be an asshole with other people. Like, there's some sort of conditioning that we need to undo. The challenge that I find, and perhaps I just like to ponder and pontificate on all the bullshit that's going on today, but it seems like our parents, the millennial, specifically the older Gen Xers and the boomers, they were at the end of a cycle. That was all they knew. If you think about the way that you did things was the way that you did things for so long. And then boom, the internet happens. And all of a sudden, the way that you did things wasn't the only way to do the thing anymore. And all of this, like you're talking about, this reflection, this questioning of why are we doing that thing now gets called into question with everything now, with the foods that you eat, with the way that you parent, with the schools that you send your kids to. And it just seems like a lot for guys to deal with if they're not expecting that, if they're not thinking that they're going to have to, I never thought that I'd have to
learn how to do bedtime. I didn't think I would do bedtime, but I've done bedtime every day for the last 5 years. And I can't tell you how I've read books. I've done breath work. I've done all the things to try and get through freaking bedtime. And I'm not glad I did. I'm super grateful that I've gotten that opportunity and the time that I've spent with them. But my dad never did bedtime. And I don't know that he would ever consider, even want to think about that or see the value in something like that. And that's okay too. But I just think it's a different context that we're living in.
For sure. The world with access to everything and access to every kind of example, which I think leads to a different set of problems of being like, there's some wild stuff out there where people are just like, this is what I do and it works really well. And someone's, wow, I was looking for a place. That seems like what I want to jump into. And you're like, that's crazy. Like, what you're doing is absolutely insane. Why would you do that? And I think for me, bringing it back to the point I've been making the whole time, you got to be like, okay, what is the intended outcome? Is that really going to get you there? Because let's take it to the bedtime thing. It's like, why would dad ever do bedtime? Because dad really enjoys it. It's super fun to read to the kid and the kid loves it. And we're like, wow. And it deepens the connection to where they feel supported and secure in their relationship with their father. And why wouldn't I want to do that? If you look at the outcome of, I want a strong, healthy, resilient, happy child, that fits smack bang in there. So regardless of whether my father did it or not, I'm like, hell yeah, I'll jump on that bandwagon and do it. So I think the access to a lot of information is great because you can see different ways of going about the same stuff. Like all the books you read, I'm sure there was one book you read that said do it one way and one book you read that said do it another. And honestly, both of them are probably right to some degree. It just depends on the context of the scenario. And that's the problem to me in the social media day and age is like everyone's a guru and they're all being like, this is how it works. And I'm like, that's not how it works. That's how it works for you right now. But I do appreciate your need to sell yourself online. And I think we run into a new set of challenges. And now the skills that we need to learn as a father is to be like, okay, let's keep examining the effect of what I'm having here. Is the long-term effect what I actually want it to be? Or is this just a response to an acute scenario that I'm currently in?
I was watching this interview. I got sucked into scrolling some reels and those interviews on the street where they stop people and they just do random interviews. And they were talking to some older people and one of them was like 90 something and the lady was like 80 something. They're a couple. And he asked them, what do you see that's different? And her thing was like, it's got to be so much harder for young people these days. She's like, it was so much easier back then. And she looks out and perhaps the complexity and all the kind of news and like everything. I mean, you could pick anything that's going on, food, whatever. And I've also heard other people echo the same sentiments, but with regards to parents. Yes, for sure, it's never been harder for kids, but similarly that the challenge has never been harder for parents. I'm curious for you, like I could see your boys running around in the background. They're probably pushing teenagers age soon. Looks like you got a little one too. So you've got a span of kids, but when you look at the challenges that they're facing, are there any that you're either particularly concerned about or paying attention to or things that you're talking with your boys about?
I'm not too concerned for my boys because I am their parent. There's always an unknown, right, of what's going to happen when they enter the larger world. But I let them navigate the world on their own quite a bit. And then when they ask me about something, I'll give my perspective and say, this is how I think about it. But other people think different things. I think the thing that I find a little concerning for the larger world is more access to devices for developing mind. Like, and I don't think that's an intentionally evil thing. I think it's an intentionally capitalistic money-driven thing. The phones are designed to keep you on them as long as they can. Like they're going to play off primary instincts in your brain to keep you attached to it. And they're going to make something infinitely stimulating to the point where you don't want to get off of it. And my adult brain can't cope with that, let alone a developing brain that doesn't know it's being intentionally pushed a direction. So I think that what I worry about is my kids don't get devices. I know they play video games on the weekends and occasionally I'll let them play on my phone for a second, but I'm not going to just be like, oh, here's a fucking iPhone. No, like, are you kidding me? But so many friends I know are like, yeah, I needed to give it to him to connect to him. I'm like, you can give him a flip phone. You can get him a watch that calls him on. They don't need the access to that. And people are like, you're being unrealistic. I'm not being unrealistic. Well, you think that's acceptable. And I still don't understand it. The oldest kid I have is an 11-year-old. But it's like, why would I ever give them that? I'm not going to give him heroin. I'm not going to give him fucking cocaine and be like, I don't understand why you're so hyper all the time. I'm not going to give him something that's stimulating to the point of unnatural that is designed to do a very specific thing. So I think the fear comes in me, and I'm not controlling. Like, people might hear this and be like, oh, you're controlling over your kids' stuff. Dude, my kids have so much freedom. They play outside for 11 hours a day. They're like, go off into the forest. My 5-year-old, my 4-year-old, they're like wandering through the woods with like mountain lions and knives and mushrooms, being like edible mushrooms, not taking mushrooms. But I think what I worry is that somehow the world continues to push the direction of, let's give developing minds capitalistically designed and driven devices that give them access to the entire set of beliefs that exist out there, no matter how crazy, and puts them all on equal footing and says, here you go. So I worry that when they enter the world, they're going to meet people and be like, you think what? Like, why? Like, huh? And it's just going to be so confronting to them. I don't know. Hopefully, because I feel that way. I hear some things that I'm like, have you worked that back? Like one step from what you're saying? Have you at all thought that through? Or are you just responding based off what everyone around is telling you and how you feel? It's crazy. So I can't directly pinpoint a specific thing, but that's the larger thing that I worry about.
It's big, man. We're on the other side of it. And once the box is open, you can't get it back in the box. Somehow, my son got his first iPad when he was like 2. And it is crazy to me. And part of its necessity, or its seeming necessity, part of it was, oh, he knows how to work it. He's going to use it. And there's all these kind of reasons and perhaps excuses. The other side of it is that now there's serious implications. And it's an emotional thing with him, right? There's an addiction that we're already working through. And he's only 5 years old.
And yeah. You gave that to him. But the thing is, but I've actually had friends of mine who've done that with their kids. And then one day they were just like, I'm fed up with it. They agreed upon it. And they're like, it's gone. And they just took it and they never gave it back to him. And it was like 2 weeks of them losing it. But then the kid just leveled out and was totally fine. And it has a fantastic time since. And I think they did that when he was like 14 or 15. They took it away because he had pretty unlimited access up to that point in time. And that was just a sample size of one. And I don't know exactly what that does, but I don't see the negative impact of that. I cannot understand a long-term negative impact other than them being pretty angry with you in the moment for a little bit. There is a very real sense of like, when you remove a device like that's a tool that you use for, I need some free time, let me give you this, then you have to work harder. But that's, if you accept that as the journey that you've taken, that's fine, because that's what you're trying to do. If you don't accept that, then you fight that, and it's hard, very hard. It's even hard when you accept it. But I don't know, I don't see the long-term negative impact of removing the device. That to me, because they're made to be as simple as possible. I give my kid it for a second and he can figure it out. Yeah, of course. But then I have to be like, back to what I originally said, they do what you do, not what you say. So now I have to be like, well, I'm on my computer all day and I'm on my phone all day. So then I'm saying you can't do it, and then I'm doing it. I have to work on my own thing, because then there's a dissonance there. So it's just this constant, shit burgers.
Yeah, that's what it is. People are not willing to change their own habits. And like for me, we've had a challenge with that where I try and not be mindful of when I'm just giving it to them just so that I could have a break. But there are times where it's like, that's the crutch that we're grabbing. And frankly, it's fucked up. So it's been an ongoing battle though.
But if you're doing it intentionally and you're using it that way, that's totally different than just, this is how I live. Because to me, it sounds like you're wrestling with it. It sounds like you're being like, okay, I'm going to resort to this. It's not just like, this is how we eat. We sit down at a dinner table and I hand it to him. And I don't know if that's the case with you, but that to me is you've given up. Like, you're not paying attention to what you're doing. You're not designing a child who wants to live with other people and look them in the eye. You're letting YouTube raise them. That's what you're doing. Versus, I'm going to use this as a tool. Okay, it's extra chaotic tonight. We have 8 people over. Things are a little crazy. Like, we don't normally let this happen, but you guys should put on a movie. Go put on a movie and watch The Lorax, whatever it is. That to me is very intentional. Or like, we're jumping on a flight where it's gonna be a 14-hour flight. Yeah, watch TV for 14 hours. Do it. You don't want to be a crazy person here who says don't eat the airline food and don't watch the TV. Do it. But then you accept the burden of afterwards they're gonna be a little asshole for 2 straight hours because they were on a plane staring at a screen being overstimulated fast. And that the intentionality behind it to me is the thing that I ask for parents to do. If you're doing it, know that you're using it and know that you're doing it for a purpose. Like, I'm at the doctor's office. I need my 4-year-old to sit still 40 minutes while the doctor examines him or whatever it is. Give him the phone with a game on it. Like, that's a very specific tool, not this is how we go about life. And there's a big difference there to me.
And I think that's something that people are coming online to as well, that you can't just let them have it just willy-nilly, right? Like the screen time apps, and even my 5-year-old's like, how long have I been on, right? Because he knows if I check, he hasn't been on that long, then maybe he can squeeze some more time. Yeah, it's definitely being used as a tool, and we're trying to walk it back, because at the beginning, there wasn't as much limitations around it. And now
you're drowning. As a parent, there's a real thing that you're fucking drowning. That's not a joke. You have a child and you're drowning. You have no idea what you're doing. And this is what it was for me. You're not sleeping. you're not taking care of yourself. You're constantly put out in every way. And you're like, I just need space. I need to figure out how to cope with life. So it makes total sense. I get it. I have 4 children. I get it. Trust me. Like, I haven't slept for 11 years. So I do understand. So I get it. I get why people go there.
It seems like you seem to pull yourself back into the forest every little bit, that you're starting to get out. And then it looks like you've got another one right behind it.
It gets better and better. That's why. Because you get more and more perspective. How many kids do you have? 1?
2.
Okay. So 2 to me was the hardest, because 1, you like start to get a hang of it and you're like, I got this. I figured it out at some point in time. And then you have the second and you're like, oh, this is totally different than the first one. Oh no. And now I've got 2 and I've got my time split and the world is pressing down on you. And I'm like, this is the hardest. And then you give up on a lot of control. Like, by necessity, you just can't hold on to everything. And then that allowed so much space of once you struggle through, like, how old is your youngest?
4.
So those are tough ages. Like, for me, people said terrible 2s. I had 3, 4. 3, 4, 5 was like gnarly. It just kicked you in the grundle. And you're trying to manage this whole thing. You're like, what the hell? And why are you so different than your first one? Why doesn't this work when it used to work? Those were the hardest. But then 3 and 4, you've let go of so much of that need to be in charge in the way that you were previously. You can be that much more present. So that's why we've had 4, is we had the 3rd and we're like, whoa, this is amazing. And I've loved it as a father. And I went back to 4 and I was like, this is incredible. My connection with my 4th, I'm not saying better, but I'm so much more present as a 4th time father than I am as a first time father, because you're learning to not die as a first time father. And as a 4th time father, you're like, I know how to not die.
Yeah, just to get everybody to the next holiday.
I love being a dad, and we're done. We're done with 4, but it's 3 and 4 has been truly magical for me.
I've heard people say that the 3rd one, it starts to go downhill after that. We've had our own number of reasons why that's not in the cards, at least right now. But the way that I've likened it, and I've told friends, is 1 is like playing a game on like regular mode, and then 2 is like hardcore. And it's not like a linear jump. It is like an exponentially...
I would say that's very similar. Like, when you're playing those video games, you're like, yeah, hard mode. This is fine. This is not bad. Then you get extra hardcore and you're like, wait, that's like double as hard. What's going on here? That's not kind of harder. Easy to medium to hard. Those seem linear and logical. And then all of a sudden we're playing on this game and now it's impossible. 1 hit, I die on everything. I would say the same. And the way I've described it is like 0 to 1 is such a change, because you're going from 0 to 1 and it's really difficult. And then 1 to 2 was the same amount of change, but in a different way. And so it's like it doubles, but quadruples everything. It's not.
Yeah. And, you know, ours are so different too. My son, he's probably listening to this one day. He's the artist. He's much softer and kinder and thoughtful with things. And my daughter's the one that will grab a stick and whack someone at first thought, right? And so it's just this battle. One of them likes to do one thing, the other likes the other. And part of the strain has just been managing. I gotta imagine if you're forced to hang out with somebody who you don't really like all the time, that's gotta be shitty. But I'm always fucking sitting next to them and you always put me in the seat right fucking next to them and I can't stand them. That's got to be hard for them, but it also leaks into...
Amazing, right? Like, you learn to cope with someone who's so different than you. Like, that is profoundly impactful on the rest of their lives. You don't just surround yourself with people you love. You're like, this is fine. Whatever. I'll be here. Let's learn how to navigate this.
That's a great lesson that they'll get, Pat. That lesson is less for me. I miss that lesson. And I think that's why I'm so triggered by their relationship, because I was a dick to my little brother. I was 6, 7 years older than him. And so I could kind of play that bully role. And there was a number of reasons why, but I'm sure it was just, you know, attention stuff. Now I see that and I see my son being a bully to his sister. And it triggers me, because I'm like, I saw how that damaged the relationship with my brother. And, you know, only now, freaking 25 years later, starting to actually have a real friendship or relationship.
Yeah. You get to nip that in the butt in the front end as a parent, right? Just like you said, it's an attention thing. Like, you have a second kid and all of a sudden you're giving all the attention to the second kid and you don't give it to the first kid. And you don't create that special time and make him feel like he's still loved. And again, I don't think it's as linear as that, but it clearly sounds like if I were to look back on your childhood, you probably didn't get the same attention you got. So you're like, let me take it out on this little thing that took all my attention away. And then that's damaged your relationship since then. Interesting.
One of the things that I'm curious your thoughts are is this idea of rites of passage or rites of initiation. And one of my favorite episodes was with Stephen Arms, and he wrote a book on the need for boys to go through a rites of passage into manhood and some of the challenges that our society has because we've lost that. Is that something that you either formally or informally are doing with your boys, or is that something that you think about in regards to putting them into a position to thrive as they grow older in this world?
Yeah, I think we should do that intentionally, right? I think that rites of passage have been lost from a lot of modern culture because a lot of them were tied to archaic value structures. And not to say that those value structures are inherently wrong, but there's a lot of interpretations of certain value structures and rites of passage that kind of had the rites of passage get thrown out with the overall overarching value structure. And a lot of this happens within religion or in different cultures. But in our American society, we have such an amalgamation of all of the stuff and so much access to the larger world that I feel like a lot of these have disappeared in a very natural way. They disappeared and inherent. We're going to get rid of them. It was more like they just disappeared. And there was some of those in schools that you go through your elementary school years and you graduate and you go to your middle school years and you graduate and you go to high school years and you graduate, you go to college. And it was like, those are the big milestones throughout life. But I do think rites of passage are super important. There's times that I look back on my own childhood that I feel it was done intentionally for me that were like, whoa, like that was huge. I remember that. It just sits in my brain. It was like, that was super magical. That was awesome. And I got to go spend a day in the woods by myself solo. And then I had to be silent the entire day when I was 14. And that transitioned me into like 15. And they mean a lot. And so I do want to be intentional with that with my boys. There's a great book called The Intentional Father. And it's written by a guy who is a priest or he's a pastor, but he writes about raising his kids and talks a lot about rites of passage and that. But the overall book, it's written through the lens of someone who's deeply Christian. And that's not my particular faith, but the whole book is quite good. And just very raw data around bringing young boys into manhood. And he taught about rites of passage there and the father's role in that. And I've taken a lot from it and I plan on doing a lot as my boys hit like 13-year-olds, 14, 15.
Did you actually go into the woods by yourself when you were 14?
I did, yeah. So I went to a very small high school and part of the graduation process from fifth grade into sixth grade, or maybe it was seventh grade into eighth grade. It was one of the grades into the other grade. It was like a transitioning of you're either going from elementary school to middle school or middle school to high school. The very final day of school, the whole class has to go out into the mountains and separate from each other. And you each have to like, you just get a journal and a tent and you just have to spend the night in the woods by yourself, which was freaky as shit. Like I lived in the city and I like the school was out in the mountains and it was this like small little college prep school. But yeah, that was just part of it. And the school actually that I went to had a lot of these things naturally built into it. Like actually first day of school, middle school, it's like sixth, seventh, eighth grade, you would go off on a 5-day backpacking trip with the rest of your classmates. And you would just be hiking through the mountain stuff. And that was all super fun. For high schoolers, you go on a 5-day river rafting trip down the American River. So you get to meet all your new people. There was a ritual associated with it. In addition to that, when you get back to school, like the first week of school, there was a song sharing. So it was a performance arts. There was like heavy performance arts based at that. And it was an acapella song sharing thing where the middle and high school all sat in a big auditorium together. And one by one, you stood up and sung a song acapella in front of the rest of the school. And it was like, you had to survive that process in front of your peers. And that was a ritual in and of itself. And every year you get more and more okay with that. And it's there. And you're like, oh, this is great and terrible and horrifying as a kid. But when you graduate your senior year, you're just like, whatever, this is fine. Like you can go through this every year. And that was the school I went to. And I was very fortunate to have those kind of organically built into my upbringing, which is different. And I was lucky.
I look back at some of those things. They were important though. We had some retreats. In the moment, I thought they were like, I was like, this is fucking stupid. But you look back and go, they were actually formative.
I think what's interesting is you're going to get, regardless of whether you curate them or not. So you're going to get the initiation of when your friends ask you to get really plastered, or you're going to get the initiation of when you get the opportunity to have unprotected sex or protected sex, or you're going to get the initiation of offered drugs. You're going to get these initiations. So it depends on what your formative things are. Like, do you have other things that ground you outside that make those initiations less meaningful and more just like events? Or are those your transformative things throughout your life? Oh, this group of people wants me to be a part of them. I'm going to join. Or are you satisfied outside that? And I don't know if it's as linear as that, but to me, those will happen anyway. So why not have some intended rituals that bring you from one stage of manhood into the next?
Yeah, it really is. We're going to experience it. I don't want to say anyways, but to pretend like we're not going to have these experiences, or to pretend that we're not going to be tempted or challenged or made to have our questions, our beliefs questioned, like all these things that we as men go through, to not have some sort of ritual that helps you to become aware of that, it seems foolish, frankly. Like the fact that we let that go, to think that's not something that we should, or to not think that's a reason of why things are so fucked up in the way that they are. So
I also also think the flip side of that is to completely cure it and say, this is what you need to take from this, also seems a little interesting to me. It's like the whole bar mitzvah where it's at 13, you're a man. It's, I know very different 13-year-olds. You know, some who I'd be like, you know what? You are a man. And I know others who I'm like, you're not close to being there. And that's okay. You go through the ritual and you have that. But what you're supposed to take away from rituals, I think should probably be a little less curated. It's about the experience, and what you take away from it is what you take away from it at that point in your life, and that it was a ritual and that it did sit its process there. But I'm not a professional in this. It's just my thoughts on it. I think nature is profound. I think having rituals that center around nature and experiencing that are going to be good versus ones that are around other things.
Yeah. And as you're saying that, the unfortunate side is that I would imagine that most people who are listening to this have lost that. I grew up in LA where it is the definition of a concrete jungle. It's hard to find a park. It's hard to find grass, let alone any sort of nature, any bit of nature. You've got to go to these Buddhist shrines or anything like that to get any sort of that. I think you bring up a good point. One more question before we get out of here. But before we do that, I'd love for you to share where people can get more into your world, go deeper down your rabbit hole, or best connect with you.
Yeah, I do. For my profession, I do coaching development, and I work for a CrossFit coaching development company and gym development stuff. That's outside the realm of this, so you don't need to go check that out. You can find me on social media at Coach Pat Barber if you want to, but my stuff that's more around the fatherhood and manhood stuff is called The Father's Guild. So if you search The Father's Guild, that's my social media profile for that. That's very much in this vein and the thing that I truly believe in, and not that I don't believe in coaching, it's just that's my passion, but it's not a business. I'm just putting out my thoughts on this kind of stuff. So if you're interested, that's where it is. The Father's Guild.
Love it. We'll link that up in the show notes. And last question for you, Pat. In your opinion, what's the definition of modern masculinity?
I think authenticity is a pretty good word. Think being very authentic in all regards. And that is going to look different from person to person. But and understanding that how you present as a man is going to change throughout life, but that you're constantly being real and examining why you're doing the things that you're doing. I think to me, that is modern masculinity. Yeah, that works for me.
Well, appreciate you being here, Pat. And those of you fellas who are still with us and stuck with us, we appreciate you. We would love and appreciate a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. If you know a guy who needs to hear this, someone who's either going through it or they've got some new things on their plate, they just got married or having a kid or a new job or lost a job, whatever it is, check in on them, see if they're good, and maybe send them this episode and let them know that you were thinking about them. But we appreciate you being part of the tribe. As always, we'll see you on the next one. Later, y'all.